Libor Peshek led the Czech Philharmonic Orchestra in the Symphony Espanol by Eduard Lalo. The soloist, Christian Tetzlaff.
You are listening to WHFR Dearborn, and thank you for tuning in here at Henry Ford Community College Radio. It is our pleasure to present to you the next edition of the exciting Dearborn Symphony Orchestra 2008-2009 season. It is taking place Friday, February 6th, entitled From Russia with Love. Again, Friday, February the 6th, the wonderful Dearborn Symphony Orchestra will perform in the 2009. If you'd like more information, please call the Symphony Office at 313-565-2424, or you may simply type in dearbornsymphony.org and get to their website. Again, Dearborn Symphony's next installment in the 2009 era, it's called From Russia with Love, Friday, February the 6th. Hope you'll enjoy that. Lots of great music coming from this wonderful gem of an organization in our own backyard. Enjoy.
Good morning. This is WHFR Dearborn, the station making waves, and we are getting ready for a new edition of We Are Not Alone. Special guest today is Peter Imbrogno.
The following program has been pre-recorded. The views expressed by the participants are not necessarily those of WHFR Radio or Henry Ford Community College. Welcome to We Are Not Alone, where local investigators, as well as world-renowned scientists and ufologists, share their latest evidence in support of the UFO reality. Hi, I'm David Twitchell, and you are listening to WHFR Dearborn. And for the next hour, we will be exploring the mysteries of the UFO and abduction phenomena. And our guest today is educator, investigator, and author Philip Imbrogno. Mr. Imbrogno has been a science educator for the past 27 years. He has obtained undergraduate degrees and graduate degrees in astronomy, chemistry, and science education. And he is the author of Night Siege, The Hudson Valley UFO Mystery, Contact of the Fifth Kind, Celtic Mysteries in New England, and his latest book is Interdimensional Universe, The New Science of UFOs. And he has researched UFOs and paranormal phenomena for the past 30 years and is considered an expert in the subject nationwide. Mr. Imbrogno has been interviewed on countless radio and TV shows and documentaries, and we are happy to have him with us on We Are Not Alone today. Welcome to the show, Mr. Imbrogno.
Well, thank you.
It's good to have you on.
Good to be here today.
Good. Your book, I guess this was your first book, Night Siege, correct?
Actually, it wasn't my first book. The first book I ever wrote was a book on astronomy.
Okay.
But Night Siege was actually the first book that I wrote about UFOs.
Okay. Well, then that's what we will consider on UFOs. But no, astronomy, that's great because you know about the universe and what we got out there. How long had you been studying that before you wrote the book on astronomy?
Actually, I had been actively investigating UFOs since about 1977,
okay.
Maybe 76, maybe 75. It's been so long, you know, I don't count the years. But the interesting thing is about that, it's my interest in UFOs back in the 60s when I was in high school that got my got me interested in astronomy, which ended up finally in getting my first undergraduate degree in astronomy from the University of Texas.
Hmm. Very good. So they definitely go hand in hand, don't they, then?
Well, I thought they did at a time. You know, I was reading a lot of stuff on UFOs back in the 60s. It was a very popular subject back then. The Barney and Betty Hill abduction case, the
right.
incident at Exeter, and so on. And there were quite a few shows on TV at the time. And there were a lot of talk shows that had, you know, UFO guests. And a lot of people were talking about trips to Venus and Mars and all this stuff here back then. So, you know, but every once in a while you used to see people like Carl Sagan and Dr. J. Allen Hynek, who was the Air Force consultant to UFOs for over 20 years, on TV, you know, making this stuff sound rational. And, you know, I picked up everything I could ever get my hands on and read about Dr. J. Allen Hynek.
Mm.
And his view of the UFO phenomena back then when he was working for the Air Force was that he was to explain away all of these sightings.
Right. He was the super skeptic for Project Blue Book, wasn't he?
That's true, but he was actually told to explain away all of these sightings.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, you know, how long am I going to call these people crazy? It's credible people reporting something truly incredible. But the fascinating thing about that is that this individual, you know, became almost like a mentor to me, and I never even met him back then. But eventually, Night Siege was co-authored with Dr. J. Allen Hynek. Who
right.
knew that kid in high school reading UFO books about Dr. J. Allen Hynek and almost idolizing this guy would someday do research with him and write a book with him?
Right.
It's like, you know, whatever you want to put your mind to, you can accomplish.
That's right. That is right.
The thing is that, you know, my interest in UFOs back then geared to my interest in astronomy, fed into my interest in astronomy. And, you know, when I started actively investigating UFOs, I was kind of disappointed because I felt that many of the cases that were investigated were poorly investigated by so-called UFO investigators back in the 70s.
Mm.
And the cases that came to my attention could have, you know, conventional explanation, natural explanations, and so on. But I realized that I was only touching the tip of the iceberg. And as I got more involved with UFOs and more cases came to my attention, I realized that this was a very complex phenomena that could not be explained by any conventional means. And the more I study it, the more complex it gets.
Yes, it does. I'm a UFO investigator myself, and I will have to agree with you on that. In 1983, the Northeast Coast was inundated with a UFO flap that came to be known as the Hudson Valley sightings. You wrote the book on that. Tell us about that.
Yeah, well, you know, that's really the case that that really allowed me to investigate a large bulk of UFO reports. I'll never forget it because on March 25th, 1983, I was coming out of a diner in Porchester, New York, and the mailman, who I knew, and he knew I had an interest in UFOs, came running up to me and said, Phil, did you see it? The headlines, 100 see UFOs. I said, no, I didn't heard of it. I haven't heard about it. So he showed me the paper, the headline in the Westchester Gannett chain, the newspaper for that area, the Hudson Valley, and it said, the heading, hundreds claimed to see UFOs on March 24th, the night before. I picked up the paper, and I read the article, and it was so fascinating, and they had names of people in there. I started calling some of these people, and every time I called someone, I got the names of 10 more people who saw the UFO.
Hmm.
And in a very short time, I had a log of hundreds of people who on March 24th, 1983, saw this enormous UFO. And the thing about it is that there were so many people who saw this object.
Mm-hmm.
People from all walks of life, police officers, pilots, scientists, educators, engineers, air traffic controllers, meteorologists, people, you know, people who work for IBM, top IBM executives, people who had a standing in the community, people who never really thought about UFOs before, yet on that particular night, in the nights to follow, many of these people just stopped their cars, got out of their cars, looking up at the sky, watching an object that was very well lit with multicolored lights that was reported to be the size of an aircraft carrier silently drift across the sky at low altitude. At times, it projected down a beam of light. Now, the people who saw this, once again, were people who didn't care about UFOs.
Right.
Yet on that night, they all became believers. And to this day, they still claim that what they encountered that night was something not from this world. So, you know, this went on until the 1990s, and the bulk of the sightings, however, occurred between 1982 and 1985. Total to date, probably over 7,000 people have seen this object, including myself.
Yeah.
and that's a conservative number. These are people whose standing in the community was so solid that their testimony would not be questioned in a court of law.
Unless it had to deal with UFOs, right?
Well, yeah, but the thing is that, you know, these people who saw this object is that, you know, they were so startled as this object passed over.
Right.
That many of them said to me later that they wanted to get home because they thought there was an invasion.
Mm-hmm.
A local newspaper, the North County News, ran a story the following day comparing what happened that night to like a scare of like the War of the Worlds.
Right.
People were calling the police stations, and the lights at the police stations, the lines were flooded with calls as police officers were sent after this object, seeing it, reporting in, very exciting. I mean, you couldn't get a better scene in a sci-fi movie, you know, about UFOs and alien visitors.
Right.
It was like a sci-fi movie.
Well, from what you're describing here from 83, it sounds very much like the Phoenix Lights incident.
This that's true.
Was it that same shape, the boomerang or triangular shape craft?
That's right. You see, the front of the lights resemble a boomerang. However, behind that boomerang is a dark structure that goes triangular in shape.
Okay.
That is triangular in shape.
I see.
Now, on July 24th, 1984, the object was seen over five or six counties from Connecticut all the way to New York. And was seen by thousands of people. In 1984, it was videotaped in Brewster, New York.
Mm-hmm.
15 minutes later, after that videotape was taken, the object hovered above the Indian Point nuclear reactor in Buchanan, New York, which is right on the Hudson. Dividing, you know, the east side of the Hudson, the west side of the Hudson, on the eastern shore of the Hudson. Now, that object came over the only reactor that was in service at the time, reactor number 3, hovered above there for 15 minutes. The New York State Power Authority police officers who witnessed this, 12 of them, got right under it and noticed that it was triangular in shape, with a boomerang-shaped pattern of lights in the front. It was dark gray material, and underneath there were circular-like areas in which the areas were large enough to fit cars into it. They estimated that the size from end to end was 900 feet, and there was no sound. One of the security officers inside the console, inside the plant, told me that he had to pan his camera, his security camera, 180 degrees so that he can look at the entire object. Now, this is one of the only cases in which a UFO was definitely confirmed over an active nuclear reactor.
Mm-hmm.
Now, later on, Indian Point itself, a fellow by the name of Carl Patrick, who was the spokesman for the plant at the time, he was being barraged by media saying, you know, we saw the thing over Indian Point, and he confirmed the sighting. Now, one reporter asked him, did the guards fire on the object? And he said, I cannot confirm or deny that they fired on the object, but they did what was necessary to protect the plant. And you know what? They fired on the object, and they had a helicopter come from Camp Smith, a gunship, and they fired on the object, and there was no effect. This is the information that I got, but they will not confirm or deny that they fired on this the Hudson Valley UFO.
Isn't that something, like, you ask someone at, Edwards Air Force Base, you know, you have UFOs here, captured UFOs or bodies here at Edwards Air Force Base. They say, we cannot confirm nor deny. You ask them if they have anything on Santa Claus or the Easter Bunny, they'll laugh at you and say, of course not. But when you ask them about an alien craft, they say, we cannot confirm nor deny. Do you notice the difference there?
Well, to me, that's a confirmation that they knew something went wrong, but they don't know the entire story.
Right.
But they're sure something happened.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you know, the videotape that we have of the Hudson Valley UFO, this is the only UFO videotape that was looked at by the Jet Propulsion Laboratory in Pasadena, California.
Okay, now you've seen this film, right?
Oh, the videotape?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you know, back in 1984, we displayed it on CNN. You know, Ted Turner gave us a call.
Mm.
It was first, you know, on CNN. And of course, you know, the FAA and the Air Force comes forward with this explanation that the Hudson Valley UFO was nothing more than a bunch of hang gliders with lights on them.
Hang gliders.
Yeah, hang gliders. And then they said ultralight aircraft, which is like, you know, an open kind of craft with just a motor on it, a lawnmower on it, and a light.
Right, right.
And that the pilots hung colored lanterns from the bottom of the object. Then they later said that the Hudson Valley UFO was nothing more than a bunch of small aircraft flying in close formation, 6 inches from wingtip to wingtip.
Wow.
I mean, that's impossible, because at one particular sighting, the winds gusted up to 30 knots. Any small aircraft, there would be enough motion between there that these craft would go colliding into each other.
Certainly.
Yet this object was rigid in the wind. But so, you know, that's fine and dandy. You know, the FAA wants to play these games and so on and try to quiet down the people. I can see from a logical point of view.
Mm-hmm.
But the Jet Propulsion Laboratory looked at the tape. The only thing we wanted to know, did the lights on that tape, that videotape, represent one rigid object, one solid object, or individual objects in formation? Their conclusions were that the object was one rigid object, ruling out the plane and formation theory for the Hudson Valley UFO.
Now, say it again. Who was the Jet Propulsion Lab?
The Jet Propulsion Laboratory in Pasadena, California.
Confirmed.
They're the guys who image all the space imaging stuff from Voyager and Mariner and the Pluto Express, you know, and Cassini. This is attached to NASA, and they do all the imaging for NASA and the government. It's a government-run program.
So what did the people who said it's nothing but ultralights, what did they have to say when they got this conclusion from Jet Propulsion Lab?
Well...
Or did they say?
Well, they didn't say much of anything.
I'll bet they didn't.
They didn't say anything at all. But at JPL, they were saying... Well, we're not going to say this is an alien spaceship. Maybe it was a blimp.
Ah.
You know, so, you know.
Going sideways, moving sideways.
Yes, you know, and hovering and doing all these fantastic maneuvers, at times disappearing and reappearing in the sky. Over in Yorktown on March 24th, 1983, a number of people saw the lights coming. And they got very concerned because they thought it was a very large aircraft in trouble coming in for a crash landing.
Mm.
As it got closer, they realized there was no sound. One particular witness was a meteorologist at the Westchester County Airport. And he said as the object came far closer, he realized this was no plane. It passed over his head. He said it blocked out the sky. There wasn't a sound. He said it was the size of an aircraft carrier, and he said that then all of a sudden, all the lights went out. And he was looking up at the sky, trying to see a dark silhouette or something, but all he saw was stars.
Hmm.
The object totally disappeared. And then about 6 seconds later, he said, flash, all the lights come back on, and now all the lights are slimy computer green, as he called it, and he saw this massive object blacking out the sky. We had reports over and over again that this object was able to disappear and reappear in different parts of the sky.
Fascinating. We're going to get right back to that. Hold that thought, please, Mr. Imbrogno. I need to remind our listeners that we're speaking with Philip Imbrogno, author of Night Siege. I'm David Twitchell. You're listening to We Are Not Alone, here on WHFR.FM, the station making waves. And we're going to explore this object disappearing and vanishing in plain sight and reappearing shortly after this non-commercial break. So please stick around.
Red Defender, thank goodness you're here. That huge asteroid is headed right towards Earth.
I'll handle this. Like an arrow shot from a man-sized bow, the Red Defender hurtles into space using his super strength to stop the asteroid.
He's stopping the asteroid. It's moving away from Earth. You saved us. How did you do it?
I just stopped the asteroid and reversed its course back into space.
Look, the moon. It's exploded.
Where exactly did you throw that asteroid?
Away. I threw it away.
No more moon. That means no more tides. Tides are created by the moon.
And no more walks in the moonlight. I love walks in the moonlight.
Saving the world isn't easy. Saving a life is. Just one pint of blood can save up to 3 lives. To find out more, go to bloodsaves.com. A public service message brought to you by the Ad Council.
The Trade and Apprentice Education Division of the Henry Ford Community College is excited to present a new 10-credit-hour renewable energy certificate program. The content of the courses will be structured to inform the students of both present and future renewable energy concepts. This certificate program should interest students who are looking for an alternative to our current reliance on fossil fuels. To learn more about this program, please contact the Trade and Apprentice Education Division at 313-845-9609 or on the internet at www.hfcc.edu.
And hello, hello to you. This is Lynn, your host of No Boys Allowed, heard right here on WHFR 89.3. That's No Boys Allowed, where we explore the music of female artists who sing, who act, who play musical instruments, who speak quotable quotes. You'll even hear a recipe you might just like. Tune in every Saturday afternoon from 1 until 3 for No Boys Allowed with your host, Lynn, right here on WHFR, the station making waves. Where's that measuring cup?
This is WHFR.FM, the station making waves. I'm David Twitchell. You're listening to We Are Not Alone. And we're speaking with educator and scientist and author, Mr. Philip Imbrogno. And we're speaking to him about his book on the UFO sightings of Hudson Valley in 1983 and continuing on. And his book is Night Siege. Mr. Imbrogno, we were speaking about the object just disappearing, this huge object just disappearing. Can you elaborate on that?
Yeah, well, that's one of the most bizarre things when you have an object that size. Most of the witnesses who saw it on those particular sighting dates from 1983 to 1984 in particular, one of the things they said that it was just incredible because you had this object that had this presence of this enormous mass, just like floating in the sky, as if it had no weight. But you get this mm-hmm. presence of mass. Mm-hmm. People saw it vanish, then reappear in another section of the sky. It would vanish in one town and reappear in another town. Now, there's also reports of a number of private pilots who were in the air at the time that as they approached this particular object, they saw it fold down upon itself as if you were collapsing an antenna right. and disappear into a point. Mm. So we're talking about something here that, although it appears physical, it may not be matter as we know it, and it may be using more than three-dimensional space in order to travel and to hide itself or disappear. One mm. thing that we were talking about, you know, when people were talking about the size of this object, of course, you know, Night Siege, the Hudson Valley UFO sightings, was co-authored with the late Dr. J. Allen Hynek.
Right.
And I remember sitting around talking to Dr. Hynek, and he said, this doesn't make sense. If this was a giant spaceship from another world, he said, and it stood in the area for so long and was witnessed by so many people, he said, where do you keep this object in the daytime? I mean, he said, there's got to be a more exotic explanation for this.
Right.
And Dr. Hynek started talking about a parallel reality that existed very close to us, and that an alien intelligence lived in this parallel reality. And they weren't traveling thousands of light years across the space, the galaxy, to get to us. That they were very close to us, and they came in and out of our reality by dimensional shifting.
Okay.
So, you know, if you have something like that, then you can account for, you know, things like the Hudson Valley UFO appearing in an area and disappearing.
Right.
Not only did we have sightings of this very, very large object, but there were also smaller triangular objects with widths of about 100 feet, which sounds very big, but in comparison to this other object,
right,
they were very small.
Right.
They were also seen in the area at the same time, moving over homes, projecting down a brilliant beam of light. Now, the fascinating thing is that the beam of light engulfed people in cars or homes, but it didn't project down on all the houses or all the cars. It seems to have chose which houses it wanted to project a beam of light down on. The fascinating thing is that all the cases that we followed up on, the people or individuals or even families in the area who had this beam of light projected on them later had an abduction experience or a contact experience. When the beam of light was on them or their family, each one reported some type of psychic or mental connection between them and the craft, as if there was some type of communication going on. I don't know if a lot of people out there saw the movie Close Encounters of the Third Kind, when Richard Dreyfuss had the beam of light projected on him, and he got all those visions and images in his mind of, you know, of Devil's Tower. Well, things like that were taking place. And when I...
Well, you know, Steven, if I may interrupt here, Steven Spielberg, you probably know this, but for the sake of the listeners who do not, Steven Spielberg is a staunch believer in the UFO reality, and he took various stories... various accounts, I should say, from the case books of UFO investigators, and kind of slapped them together and made a fictitious movie out of it.
For Close Encounters of the Third Kind.
Right.
Actually, Dr. Hynek actually coined the phrase Close Encounters of the Third Kind.
Right.
And in his book, The UFO Experience, he put UFOs into categories, and some of the categories are Close Encounters of the First Kind, Close Encounters of the Second Kind, and Close Encounters of the Third Kind.
Right.
Now, back then in 1983, we had a lot of bizarre cases going on. I mean, most of the sightings were amazing, and they were made by credible people reporting something truly incredible. But also, we had cases of alien beings being sighted, people claiming to be abducted by aliens, people claiming to have contact with aliens. We purposely kept those cases out of Night Siege at the request of Dr. J. Allen Hynek. And the conversation I had with Allen was, he said, we have to keep these cases out because we want to keep this as respectable as possible. I mean, if you can call UFOs respectable and believable. He said, you know, he said that back then, of course, we're talking about the 80s, it was hard enough to accept UFOs.
Right.
And so he wanted to keep Night Siege a documentary of these credible people having incredible experiences. And he said to me, you know, you can't tell the press about this other edge, this other avenue to it. The high strangeness cases, the abductions and so on. He says, the press will have a field day with it.
Right.
So my second book on UFOs, Contact of the Fifth Kind, included those cases which were kept out of Night Siege.
Well, share with us one or two of those, would you?
Well, the thing is that many of them were abduction cases where people were actually visited by alien beings. People who originally saw the Hudson Valley UFO that felt as if there was some type of communication. Now, in one particular case, there's a family who had a sighting, and their home was engulfed by a brilliant beam of light from the UFO. And I shouldn't call it a UFO. I mean, it's unidentified, but obviously it was some type of vessel piloted by intelligence of some sort.
Mm-hmm.
Then later on, they had another sighting. And then one evening, they remember going to bed. They don't remember going to bed, but at 3 o'clock in the morning, the entire family's up. The children, the parents, and the grandparents living there. They're walking around the house and wondering why everybody's up.
Hmm.
And they look out the window, and this object is slowly moving away, an object which they have seen before.
Okay. And
now the daughter, the youngest daughter, starts telling the story when they're all getting together, finding out what's going on, about how the spacemen came through the walls and took them.
How old was this little girl?
Back then, she was 9 years old.
Okay.
And she said the spacemen came through the walls and took them. Now, under hypnosis, the adults told a story about being taken aboard a craft, being laid on tables, the entire family, and having various things done to each members of the family.
Mm-hmm.
And the entities that took them were your typical gray aliens with the large heads and the big eyes and so on.
Mm.
And then they released them. But there were no physical marks on them. But each one under hypnosis told this incredible story.
Mm.
Now, this is not the only case. There were many other cases that took place. As a matter of fact, to date, I have 327 abduction cases in the Hudson Valley.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we're talking about a large number of people who were obviously scanned by this object, and later on, they came back for them.
And how credible do these witnesses seem?
Well, let me put it this way. None of them are looking for publicity.
Right.
None of them have nothing to gain by reporting this experience. Yet, some of these people, their life has been totally changed because of the encounter.
Right.
And there are just so many of these cases that, and they're so similar, that you really can't deny that something's going on here. Whether or not the UFO triggered off some type of fantasy about people being abducted, or it's really happening, it still needs, you know, serious consideration.
Well, I always say that unless these guys come all this way just to put on an aerial show for us, they must have some other agenda.
Well, you know, when the sightings were going on, I got a call from Bud Hopkins.
Okay.
And Bud Hopkins is probably one of the, I would say, one of the pioneer researchers into the abduction phenomena.
Yes, he was on the show a little while ago.
Yeah, you know, Bud and I go way back. We go way back to, like, to the 70s researching UFOs.
Mm-hmm.
So he called me up and said, you know, what's going on there? I said, you know, all of these sightings. What do you think is going on? He said, you know what they're doing? He says they're looking for people. And back then I said, I'm like, well, maybe, you know. But, you know, after years getting into the research and getting all of this data, Bud was probably correct. Actually, Bud was out here. He did hypnosis on a number of the people out here, and they were quite dramatic cases. As a matter of fact, the people were, like, terrified under hypnosis as to what was taking place.
Mm.
You have to remember, the people out here in the Hudson Valley are, you know, usually they have high-paying jobs. They're, you know, they don't think about UFOs.
Right.
They don't think about being abducted by aliens. Yeah, after the Hudson Valley case and all this other paranormal phenomena that took place in the area, all of these people that had these experiences, their lives were totally changed by it.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't matter if you were a police officer, a scientist, an IBM executive. Doesn't matter who you were, your life was totally changed by it. People who were driving in their cars, stopped by objects and alien creatures coming out, surrounding their cars and taking them aboard. I mean, this was going on practically every night in the area for several years.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I know. Like I say, Bud Hopkins was on the show a while back, and he shared several cases with us. But the fact that this happened to these people, something happened to these people, is bad enough. But when they share it with someone else, you can imagine the ridicule. And I'm sure that they were being ridiculed, which will change their life even more, jeopardize their families, jeopardize their jobs. Did you see any of that going on in the Hudson Valley?
Well, that was definite. Some people did get their jobs jeopardized, mm-hmm. and some people whose families fell apart. Mm-hmm. Another thing, during that time, Whitley Strieber wrote the best-selling New York Times bestseller, Communion,
right,
which I'm sure a lot of people are familiar with. Mm-hmm. But you see that Communion, Whitley Strieber lived, his cabin was in the Hudson Valley. His experiences took place at the same time these sightings were going on.
Oh.
So he uses the Hudson Valley case to give validity to his own experiences by saying, look, everybody's having these UFO encounters and all of these abduction experiences. You know, is it so hard to believe that it was happening to me also?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So people have to consider that when they're reading Communion, is that his experiences took place where all this stuff was going on at the time. And the Hudson Valley case took place long before Communion was published.
And Whitley Strieber had a lot to lose by coming forward on it, because he was already a successful novelist and an author. And yet he was experiencing these things, and he just felt it's time to come forward. And now his efforts are more or less geared toward the UFO phenomenon itself.
As a matter of fact, most of his books are about UFOs related now.
Right. We're going to have to take one more break and let our listeners know that you're listening to WHFR.FM, the station making waves, 89.3 FM on your radio, and, of course, WHFR.FM on your computer worldwide. So we are speaking with Philip Imbrogno. I'm David Twitchell. You're listening to We Are Not Alone. And we'll be right back to speak to Mr. Imbrogno some more about his book, Night Siege, The Hudson Valley UFO Sightings. So stick around.
Morning, gentlemen. Want to hear our specials?
Sure.
First, we have the seafood special. It's actually been sitting around here for a week. Then there's the cream of chicken soup. It's had no refrigeration since it was made yesterday. We're known around these parts for our food poisoning.
Wouldn't it be great if you could be warned of life's risks? If you have diabetes, you can. There's a simple blood test called A1C that can help measure your risk of complications such as heart attack. Why is it important? Because 2 out of 3 people with diabetes die from a heart attack or stroke. If your A1C is above 7, your doctor can show you how to lower it. If you have diabetes, know your risk for heart attack. Know your A1C. Ask your doctor. Or for more information, go to www.diabetesa1c.org or call 1-877-TEST-A1C. Brought to you by the American Diabetes Association, Juvenile Diabetes Research Foundation International, and the Ad Council.
If you're thinking about going back to school or continuing your education, you should thank Henry Ford Community College. Since 1938, HFCC has provided excellence and innovation in education and services to their students and their community. Over the decades, thousands of students have gone on to become leaders in their fields, and now it's your turn. The winter semester begins Monday, January 12th, and registration is already taking place. Remember, Henry Ford Community College offers a job skills guarantee, a credit transfer guarantee, and a tuition freeze guarantee that guarantees that your tuition rates will be frozen if you graduate from HFCC within 4 years. Classes are filling up fast, so call 1-800-585-HFCC today or visit us online at www.hfcc.edu for more information. Henry Ford Community College, your best choice guaranteed.
Where would you go if you were looking for the best singer-songwriter, modern folk, and Celtic music on the airwaves? Well, you're already there, WHFR.FM, the station making waves. Hi, I'm John Bomarito. Each Sunday morning from 10 a.m. till 1 p.m., I host a show called Acoustic Alternatives. I've been doing it over 6 years now. It'd be a pleasure if you join me this Sunday. I've got some great music to play for you. Again, the best singer, songwriter, modern folk, and Celtic music on the airwaves, WHFR.FM.
This is WHFR.FM, the station making waves. I'm David Twitchell, and this is We Are Not Alone. We're speaking with author Philip Imbrogno on his book, Night Siege. And let's get back to this photographic evidence that we were talking about earlier. I may have seen this particular bit of footage, but I don't recall it. I don't put it with that incident. How do I get a hold of that? Is it on the web? Is it on YouTube? Is it?
Actually, I think it's still on YouTube because NBC Dateline NBC did the top 10 UFO, the most puzzling UFO cases in history, the top 10.
Right.
And Hudson Valley came in at number 5, and they showed the video footage on that.
Okay, this was just recently, wasn't it?
It was in April.
Okay, I saw you on that, yes indeed. And I was going to review that. I taped that show, and shame on me, I did not review that before I came to the studio today to speak to you. But so that video is the one in question, right?
Right. That's the one we're talking about.
Okay.
And back then, of course, you know, in 1984, you know, video cameras weren't as high-tech as they are today.
Right.
So the resolution is very low, but it's a very, very good video. It's probably one of the best nighttime video ever made of UFO. And it is the only officially video that was looked at by the Jet Propulsion Laboratory in Pasadena, California, the most anti-UFO establishment in the world.
And they weren't going to say, well, yeah, that's definitely from the planet Melmac, but they said, what, we could not identify it?
Well, they said we can't identify it, but it's one rigid object and not individual objects.
Mm-hmm.
So the state police and the Air Force and everybody, the FAA up here, is trying to tell people, don't worry about it. It's nothing more than a bunch of pilots hoaxing trying to fake a UFO.
Mm-hmm.
Yet, you know, JPL says otherwise. They say that the lights represent one rigid object, and that's a quote from an official report that I got from them.
Right. Well, I've told this story, my story. I'm not going to go through the whole thing again, but when in 1962 in Detroit, Michigan, I saw a object emerge from a pinhole point in a clear night sky, and it was a city block long. It just came out of there gradually in a cloud of smoke, and my whole family saw it. Hundreds of people in the Detroit area saw it. And they told us it was the Northern Lights, for goodness sake. We're looking at a structured craft.
You know, I remember those sightings.
Okay.
Yes, and that's what they said. It was the Northern Lights.
Okay.
People were terrorized by the Aurora Borealis, a freak occurrence of the Aurora Borealis. I said to myself, I listened to some of the, you know, from the papers carried, some of the AP and the UPI carried some of the witnesses' statements from there.
Hmm.
And I remember saying, what are they, kidding?
But you see, they weren't telling us that saw this craft because we knew the difference. They were telling the guy next door who was sound asleep at the time, you know, don't worry, your neighbor's nuts. All he saw was the Northern Lights and he can't tell the difference. So now who's he going to believe, you see? But there's enough people now that, you know, figure, you know, millions of people worldwide cannot be crazy or liars. You know, they're putting it together.
Well, that's true. And like we say out here in the Hudson Valley, can 7,000 witnesses be world wrong about what they saw?
Well,
you know, so...
I don't know about thousands here, but I know that hundreds of people on that evening, 11 o'clock at night, are you familiar with Detroit area?
Not too familiar.
Okay, well, we're broadcasting out of Dearborn, Michigan, so those who hear my voice here on the radio know about the Joy Road and Southfield area. And here's Joy Road and Southfield, busy streets, 11 o'clock at night on a Saturday night, You know, maybe people coming out of bars looking up in the air saying, I'm never going to drink again. You know, but here's this craft emerging from, they saw it. Hundreds and hundreds of people saw it, and they got calls in and everything, and they just said, well, so they had to come up with some excuse, and that was their excuse, the Northern Lights. So,
well, you know, things are, they try to explain things away, but, you know, it's interesting because you could have 100 people come forward and say they had an incredible encounter with something very, very, very strange. People like, you know, who have all these impressive backgrounds and so on. And all you need is one person to come forward and say, oh, I saw it too, it was nothing but a blimp, or it was nothing but this, or I saw it was nothing but a plane. And people will say, you know, oh, yeah, it's all been solved, don't worry about it.
Right.
It takes like hundreds of people to verify a sighting. And definitely, you know, people who are experiencers have the burden of proof.
Right, right, right. But the skeptic doesn't have anything to prove. They'll give these crazy explanations that don't fit the evidence. They'll leave bits and pieces of the evidence out. And then you say to them, well, prove it was that. They'll say, oh, that we have, that was just one of our jet fighters that was going over. Or several of them. Fine. Prove it. And I will know that that's what it was. Well, we don't have to prove anything. You're the one with the exceptional claim. Therefore, you must have the exceptional evidence. Am I right?
Well, that's true. That's exactly what happened when they were talking about it on Dateline NBC.
Right.
Some of the skeptics were saying, oh, well, we remember that. That was nothing more than planes flying in formation. And one of the skeptics was asked, well, did you investigate the sightings and talk to the people? Well, no.
No.
How could you make an assumption like that?
Well, we don't have to prove that.
No, see, they don't have to prove that what the explanation was. All they have to do is come up with some type of explanation that sounds reasonable. And people will say, oh, yeah, well, you know, that's it. But the thing is, a lot of these UFO skeptics have never investigated a UFO case themselves.
Right. That's right.
So they really don't know what it's all about, yet they come forward as experts giving evidence that the UFO mystery can be solved easily because people are just crazy, they're just dreamers, they want to see UFOs. But what about the people who never even thought about UFOs that have these incredible encounters that change their lives? What's going on with them, you would ask?
Right.
Oh, well, you know, they probably were trying to fake it, it's a hoax, or they misinterpreted something or something like that. But you see, the UFO phenomena is very real, and I know that for a fact. Just before Night Siege was published, I got a call from the Air Force. Now, I'm the first civilian UFO investigator to be directly contacted by the Air Force since Project Blue Book closed down in 1969. They were very concerned about the Hudson Valley UFO, and they had me on the phone for an hour asking me questions about what was going to be in that book because they did not want to start a UFO scare. And they admitted to me on the phone, this major, that they had no idea what was causing the Hudson Valley UFO, but they were very concerned about it. So if the Air Force is trying to tell us that UFOs don't exist, why are they calling me and keeping me on the phone for an hour because they're concerned about the information that's in my book?
Yeah, I thought they'd already explained it.
Yeah, if it doesn't exist, why are they so concerned?
If it was just ultralights, you know? If it was just ultralights, why are they worried?
Well, that's the whole thing. I mean, you know, what goes on here? Anyway,
another theory was military aircraft. Now, why was this explanation rejected?
Well, you know, in the Hudson Valley, we know there was some type of cover-up that was tried after that. Later on, military aircraft did appear in the area and fly in formation. They were witnessed by people who saw the UFO and they looked at it and said, those are planes.
Mm-hmm.
You could hear the engines passing over. It was not the same thing that we saw yet. But you see, but the people who did not see the UFO then saw these planes flying in formation and would say, oh, yeah, that's what everybody just saw. You know, there was a deliberate cover-up by some type of government agency. I saw these planes in formation. I saw the UFOs. Two totally different things. I tracked down these planes in formation to Stewart Airfield on a secure landing area that was an old SAC base back in the 60s, which is now operated by the CIA.
Hmm.
And these planes, we had them in binoculars. They were Cessnas. They were O2As, which is a version of the Cessna, with muffled air engines. And they actually separated and then landed at Stewart Airfield.
Mm-hmm.
Their obvious purpose was to try to fake a UFO.
They weren't tracking these or chasing these UFOs. Is that
no,
right?
They came out later after the sightings.
Okay.
Because it was making such a big impact, these UFO sightings,
right,
that they wanted the Commandant to convince the people that this is what they were seeing. So they went up and faked the UFO. How do I know this for sure? I talked to one of the pilots. And the pilots who went up had no idea. They just had orders to fly.
Right.
And fly around the area and put on a show. But the people who saw the UFO on 1983, 1984, then later the planes in 1986, said they were two different things because you could hear the engines from the planes.
Right.
And, of course, you know, they were individual objects. Right. So there was an attempt by some government agency, probably the CIA, to cover up the Hudson Valley UFO sightings by trying to convince people that this is what they saw.
Mm-hmm. It was probably the Air Force that sent them up there, you know, because the Air Force gets very, very antsy when people see UFOs.
Huh? Of course, you know, they really don't want all the calls. I mean, they don't want the people to know that they're still really collecting UFO reports.
Right. And, you know, John Greenwald, Black Vault, he found this out that our UFO sighting reports go to the NSA, which is not subject to Freedom of Information Act, but the NSA shares our secret UFO reports with Canada, and Canada's equivalent to the Freedom of Information Act is not as rigid as ours. Therefore, Greenwald was able to get a ton of information from Canada that he couldn't get from America. Did you know that?
I've heard about things, yeah.
So he can go around the bend, so to speak. Get a little information from Canada, too. So.
Well, during my investigation, I was also contacted by the NSA.
Mm-hmm.
Especially when the videotape was out about the Hudson Valley UFO. Mm-hmm. I was asked to turn that tape over to the NSA.
Oh, really?
And
you were asked?
This is before we made the tape public.
Mm-hmm.
And I refused to. And I was told straight on, he said, you know, Phil, the government has done away with people for less.
Oh, my.
Yeah. I mean, there were people sitting with me when this person was telling me this, and I was saying to myself, I couldn't believe what I was hearing.
Mm. But you went forward with it anyway.
Of course.
Have they ever tried to debunk your video evidence?
As who?
Have they ever tried to debunk your video evidence?
No. Actually, no one has ever tried to debunk that tape. You know, one of the reasons is because all of these people, these agencies and these people are trying to write off the Hudson Valley UFO and say, well, they were nothing but planes in formation. The fact is that the videotape, they want to stay away from that because the Jet Propulsion Laboratory said it was not individual object, but one rigid object. I mean, so, you know, when it comes to the tape, nobody wants to discuss it.
Right. That's it.
But it's still one of the best, you know, evidence of you know, UFOs being real.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, the witnesses and the people, their testimonies in the area is solid. as solid today as it was 25 years ago.
Right. Mr. Philip Imbrogno, author of Night Siege, the Hudson Valley UFO Mystery, and Interdimensional Universe, the New Science of UFOs. Now, I'd like to get into Interdimensional Universe, but we are running out of time. Would you be able to come back next month and we talk about that?
Sure.
I'd appreciate it. I'll get together with you and we'll do a show for January. And in the meantime, anybody wants is interested in your books, where can they find more information on that?
Well, you know, they can get the book at any bookstore and also, you know, of course, on Amazon.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the best deals they get for the book is on Amazon.
Mm-hmm.
So also you can call the publisher to order it. But you can get it at Barnes & Noble. You can order it at any bookstore.
Wherever fine books are sold.
Right? The best books.
Wherever the best books are sold. That's what I like to say about my books. Wherever the fine books are sold. Mr. Imbrogno, thank you very much for joining us today.
It was a pleasure.
And I hope to speak to you again soon.
Okay.
Take care.
Good night.
And if you have any questions or comments for me, you can contact me by writing to me at dtwitchell@hotmail.com. And this show, as well as all the forum shows, is now being archived at whfr.fm's website. Click on the forum button on WHFR's homepage. We Are Not Alone is now archived at blackfaultradionetwork.com, as well as on my website, ufoimplications.com. That's ufoimplications.com. And I want to take this opportunity to wish all our loyal listeners a very Merry Christmas, Happy Holidays, and the very best of the New Year. And stay tuned to WHFR for the best in alternative music as well. And I want to thank you for joining us today. Please join us again the first Saturday of each month at 10 a.m. when we will again explore the mysteries of the UFO phenomenon. And until then, I'm David Twitchell reminding you to keep an eye on the sky.
Good morning, this is WHFR Dearborn, the station making waves, and I'm Lynn. I'll be filling in for Bill today, and we'll be doing all kinds of interesting music. It always gives me an opportunity to play with the boys, and I found some great Christmas music. Some of it was a lot of fun, some of it was a little more serious, and also found a couple new CDs that I'd like to share. So stay tuned for Light from the Underground, WHFR Dearborn, the station making waves.